Hi everyone, I'm Maya, founder and managing editor of Let's Hear It, and you're listening to the Hear Her Story podcast. Featured on this episode is Sian Bylock, who is the 8th president of Barnard College. Prior to Barnard, she spent 12 years at the University of Chicago as executive vice provost and professor of psychology. She is a renowned cognitive scientist and one of the world's leading experts on the science behind choking under pressure. Listen in.
I guess first, I'd love for you to tell us like a little bit about yourself as well as what made you interested in the field of cognitive science and pursue a career in academia.
Yeah, well, I've always been interested in how people perform, and people often ask if I do some research in addition to research, right? Mm-hmm. So interested in how I perform as well. And growing up, both in the classroom and on the playing field, I think there were times when I didn't perform up to my potential or what I thought it was, oftentimes in the most stressful situations. So when I went to college and realized there was a whole field devoted to human performance, I was really intrigued. And that is how I fell into cognitive science and started the work I was doing. And when I was really getting into cognitive science, I also realized that there were a lot of people studying how people succeed, but less looking at why we fail. Mm-hmm. And why we fail specifically when we perceive a situation to be pressure filled. And so I really was interested in asking questions about that.
Right. And I know you've spent, a great amount of time researching specifically like what causes like self-doubt, which often leads to mm-hmm. failure and lack of success, and particularly for women in male-dominated jobs and fields. What can you tell us about your findings for this, and how do you think women can actually overcome self-doubt?
Yeah, I think whenever we're in a situation where there are maybe historical cues or cues from the environment that we don't belong, it can cause us to start worrying and doubting ourselves. And that's certainly true for women in male-dominated fields. And in my research, what I argue is that those worries, those self-doubts are like, they're a cognitive load. It's kind of like driving and talking on the cell phone at the same time, not mm-hmm. a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing really to do with the physical aspect of driving and talking on the cell phone. It's mm-hmm. all the mental. You just can't pay attention very well to two things at once. And when we're worrying about how others are judging us, and we're trying to focus on what we're doing, that can be detrimental. And so what I've been really interested in is finding techniques to really quiet down those worries, both individually in terms of what women can do in the workplace or in the classroom, but also for young kids coming into schooling and asking questions about how we can prevent the perpetuation of ideas and stereotypes that we know are not true, like girls are not as good as boys at math.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever felt this way, like that you've, had an experience like kind of like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it comes back to doing a little bit of me-search. I've often been in situations where I'm just the only woman in the room, and I think it's very easy for us to have this inner monologue of, should we be there? Are people looking at us differently? Mm-hmm. And that inner monologue isn't necessarily helpful, and it's not necessarily justified. And so I've been really interested in figuring out, what can I do to focus my attention so that I'm not dwelling on the worries? And so something as simple as actually thinking about why you should be there rather than why you shouldn't can be a really important way just to harness our power of attention. Thinking specifically about, reasons that you're at the table. And I find myself using my techniques and reminding myself of why I'm supposed to be somewhere and my ability to succeed. And I think it can be helpful for others too.
Definitely. And you also mentioned in the Harvard Business Review piece that you wrote this like concept of learned helplessness. So kind of this feeling of lost control that usually, affects women in giving up on their goals, right? And you kind of just talked about how women should just be more self-aware and kind of think about these situations. But, you know, how do you actually go about this? Like, how, like, can you be more self-aware in understanding, like, how things go wrong and improve for the next time? Is it more, you know, just your internal self-reflection, or is it more of, you know, finding a mentor that can give you feedback and kind of go from there?
I mean, I think it's both, but I think the point is that we can focus our attention on aspects that will be positive. So just being aware that you might have this internal monologue of worries, and oftentimes it starts before you enter an event. I talk about it as the what ifs, right? You know, what if this goes wrong, or what if that goes wrong? Even just being aware of that, and then right there, retraining yourself. We know that simple things like getting your worries down on paper can help download them from mind. We know that focusing on why you should succeed rather than why you should fail, talking to someone who can help you talk through these things can be really important as well. But they're just as our thoughts can get the best of us in terms of worrying, we can actually harness them in a way that can be productive.
Right. And do you feel that your research has helped you succeed and kind of like see your potential, not only in your career, but also your personal life?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little biased because I use what I'm working on, but I'm definitely a person prone to want to do really well and to be concerned about doing really well. And so using some of these techniques to sort of calm my mind and to realize that a lot of what's happening is in my head, and that I have the power to change that has been really helpful. So one example is that we and other researchers have shown that even just reinterpreting your bodily responses can be beneficial. So oftentimes when you go into a stressful meeting, you're the only woman, you have to pitch to a client, you have to give a big presentation, you have sweaty palms and a beating heart. And you could really interpret that as a sign that you're about to fall on your face. Mm-hmm. But we know from research that actually reinterpreting those physiological symptoms and reminding yourself that it's really important that you have this beating heart, it means you're alive, and it's shunting important resources to your brain, can actually sort of calm you down in a way. It essentially allows you to perform better, possibly by quieting down the worries. Like, this is not a sign you're going to fail. It's a sign you're ready to go. You're ready to focus. And simple things like that I use all the time.
How do you think this kind of relates to public speaking in a way? I know, like, a lot of people, you know, including me, you know, you get very nervous, like, once you go out in front of a group of people. Specifically for this, like, what techniques have helped you for that?
Yeah, first of all, I mean, Americans especially fear public speaking. I mean, it's one of the big fears, and I think it's normal. And I think the biggest take-home from my work and others is that it's a skill you have to practice like everything else, and you have to practice it under the conditions you're going to perform under. So you have to practice speaking in front of other people. And if no one is there to listen to you, videotape yourself, even do it in front of a mirror. Practice being self-conscious, because then you're better able to really tackle some of those worries. You're able to get a handle on this over-attention to detail that sometimes happens in these situations. But public speaking is a great example. And at Barnard, we actually have a whole speaking and writing program, and we have students, juniors and seniors, who actually train as speaking fellows. They take a public speaking class, and then they're assigned to different classes where faculty are teaching to actually work with the students in the class on presentations and public speaking.
Wow, that's really great. Definitely a very useful skill, I would agree.
Yeah.
And I guess another question for your research is, you know, you've also, you know, you published over, I think it was 100 papers researching how people perform under pressure, and you detail all these findings in your book, Choke. And so, you know, you've talked a lot about performance anxiety and overthinking, and, you know, this definitely affects a lot of college students. Like, I know I've been at fault for this, along with many of my friends. Do you have any advice or techniques to help people avoid anxiety and overthinking?
Yeah, so rather than dealing with the anxiety in the moment, how do you get rid of it from the beginning?
Yeah.
I think, first of all, I think, you know, new things create anxiety. And so when you get to college, it's a stressful experience. We know it's one of the most stressful life experiences. And, it's you're learning a new way to study and a new way to perform. And so I think anything you can do to take the sort of newness out of it can be really important, whether that's taking practice tests that the professor gives you, or going to office hours, or being in the study group where you're quizzing each other. Really things that sort of help you understand what's to come. Because part of anxiety is about sort of a loss of control and not knowing what's next. And the more that you can figure out what is next, that can be beneficial. And of course, then also looking back at situations where it took a wrong turn and everything ended up being okay is a great way to remind yourself that, you know, just because you can't predict what's happening next doesn't mean it's necessarily a bad thing.
Right. And did you ever feel this way, you know, going from academia to becoming president of Barnard? Did you feel, you know, any sorts of anxiety, or did you kind of feel like you were like preparing yourself for taking on a leadership role like this?
Well, I was in the leadership role at Chicago for my last several years there, but I, you know, going into a new role was definitely anxiety provoking for me. And I still feel anxiety about, you know, new things I have to do. And I think it's about practicing these techniques and reminding yourself that, you know, one performance or one situation isn't going to change the course of your life. And understanding that just like learning content, figuring out how to perform in a particular situation is important. It's a skill you have to master like anything else.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And so throughout just being a leader in academia, what valuable lessons on leadership have you learned? And how do you think they've influenced your leadership style?
First of all, I think the people around you really matter, having good people who challenge you. I think when you get to making a decision, you don't want to have that many surprises out there, and having good people who are pushing against your ideas as your leadership group is imperative. Like, my thinking is only as good as the people around me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say it's great to listen to everyone, but you don't have to take everyone's advice. And for young women coming up in particular ways, like, I remember talking to faculty when I was an undergrad who said, oh, you know, an academic career isn't for you. And that really rocked me. But others really encouraged me. And I think, you know, the idea is that you get to pick and choose who you listen to. And that's empowering.
Mm-hmm. That's really great advice. And, you know, I think a lot of the time, college students, particularly female college students, they feel that they can't really take a risk in terms of their professional career. And oftentimes that leads to women, you know, having like a void within their work where it's not as self-fulfilling as they thought. And I guess based on your experience, how do you think more women can find their passion in order to pursue, you know, self-fulfilling and meaningful work?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think we have to often help ourselves take risks. They're scary, and sometimes it's easier to go in the other direction. And so I think being explicit about that, talking to other people who've done it, mentors can be really great there. You know, but I think the risk-taking is part of the excitement of what we're doing, and being okay with the fact that you're going to fall on your face sometimes. Mm-hmm. That is part of it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And do you feel, you know, you're excited at Barnard? You know, what excites you and like fulfills you about your work at Barnard?
Yeah. I mean, the students are amazing, and the fact that we're really helping to train the next generation of women leaders is exciting. We're also doing a lot to get students ready for what's next. We have a new initiative called Beyond Barnard that helps students from day one think about internships and jobs in academia and government, nonprofit, industry, the arts, and it's really fun to see that develop alongside their coursework. And when our students come out, they're going to grad school, they're in great jobs, and it's because they have been thinking about some of what's next from the beginning and exploring different career paths, and that's exciting to see.
Mm-hmm. Is there like a particular challenge you see that like most resonates with a lot of college students at Barnard?
I think it's worrisome to sort of not know what's next, especially when you've had education as your path your whole life. And what I think Beyond Barnard does is just start opening up what the different paths are. And when you get to think about that early on and explore, you find what interests you and what is passionate, and you figure out how you can do that and have a career in a particular area. And that's exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess, like, for, in terms of, like, you know, self-doubt, especially for female students, you know, from just engaging with young female students at Barnard, how do you think that that these female students can build resilience and kind of enter the workforce having, like, a strong sense of self-confidence?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is being challenged in your coursework, being challenged in who you talk to, finding people who don't agree with you to talk to. I mean, I think we develop our best ideas and our best perspectives when we're challenged in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's the goal of what a great college or university is in terms of developing that academic excellence. And then, you know, even talking to mentors, others who can challenge your ideas about what the right path is. I think it's really helpful.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, there's definitely some, like, a problem oftentimes when, you know, women don't necessarily go into challenging coursework because they're afraid, you know, it would harm their GPA, or they're afraid that, you know, usually, like, in computer science courses, you know, a lot of male students will kind of, like, assert their dominance. You know, do you have any advice for women, particularly in STEM fields, that are particularly very challenging courses?
Well, I think that, you know, at Barnard, we are over a third of our graduates are STEM majors, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our goal is, I think for me, one of the biggest things is to remember that, you know, you're not born a STEM student or not. Mm-hmm. You learn it. And so if you come in feeling like you don't have all the background, let's figure out ways to help you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're interested and you're at a place like Barnard, you're at a place like Cornell, we can help you get where you want to go.
Definitely. Awesome. And how do you think you've tried to set your own example and kind of share your skills and expertise with the female community at Barnard?
Yeah, I try and talk a lot about my failures. I think mm-hmm. that's helpful. I talk about how I failed. I was in a chemistry class my first year and I got the worst grade out of like 300 people on the test. And I thought I had to fail. I thought I had to stop college. I talk about things like that. And I think that's really important because I screw up like anyone else. And part of modeling this nonlinear path is that you are going to fail along the way. And everyone has failed along the way.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Do you think it's really important to kind of like openly talk about failure, you know, all your past experiences like that? Definitely. Awesome. Well, I definitely got through all my questions. That's very impressive. is there anything else you'd like to add? Any personal advice? Anything else that you'd want to share with the community?
No, I think we covered it all. I think it's great that you're doing that.
Thanks so much for listening. If you're interested in learning more or subscribing, check out the Let's Hear It site at letshearitplatform.org.